Good morning, good people. This is Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning we are joined in the studio by Dr. Patrice Harris, the chair of the board of the American Medical Association. Dr. Harris, welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
And I would be remiss if I did not mention that you are the first African-American woman to chair the American Medical Association.
That is correct. It has certainly been an honor and a privilege to reach this pinnacle. And thank you very much for recognizing that.
It's a wonderful honor, and we congratulate you on that. I ask you to join us specifically to talk with our listeners about the opioid crisis. So this is something that has overtaken the news, you know, locally and nationally over the last few months. Could you tell our listeners exactly what is the opioid crisis? What is its impact in our state and why we should be concerned?
Well, nationally, we know that approximately 90 people per day die from an opioid overdose. And then we have significantly more folks who overdose on opioids and don't die. And I think it's also important to appreciate what opioids are. Certainly the current crisis, and I believe what has fueled the current conversation, is regarding prescription drugs. And those are drugs that are prescribed by physicians. And I do want to also make one distinction that we are talking about those physicians who are acting in good faith, who are prescribing medications to their patients for pain. We know that some patients then misuse those, and some patients also become addicted. And some patients continue to use and misuse and become addicted to prescription medications. Some of those patients may change over to heroin because it's getting harder and harder to get prescription medication. Heroin is an opioid as well. And that's the point I wanted to bring up. So we are talking about a general opioid class. Now we're seeing more and more, and particularly in our state, we're seeing increasing amounts of overdose due to synthetic fentanyl. That is fentanyl that's not prescribed, but ends up in the hands of the community. So all of those are opioids. And I want to make one more distinction about the current crisis. Certainly the current crisis, again, is fueled by prescription overdoses. But we can't forget that certain communities have been dealing with heroin for many years. And our response to that, not the physician, but our communities, our societal response has been to lock those folks up. So in the current crisis, I think we've grown and we know now that folks who are often misusing these drugs have an addiction problem, and they need treatment, not incarceration.
So we have, as a community, as a country, moved away from the notion that addicts should be locked up. And we've moved to this place of treatment. And it seems that it's happened right as this, the opioid, the overprescription and the addiction to drug and pain pills, which has mainly impacted the overall broad community, not targets of the population. Because in the past, most times, even heroin, it was an underclass. It was people that we decided you could throw away. They could just wallow over there being addicted, or they could be locked up. But is it just that it has impacted so many at the same time? Is it that this is mainly impacting a lot of white suburban community members? What is the deal that has really brought this sharp focus on opioid abuse?
Well, you know, the what has led to our current situation is many factors. And I believe that I would answer your question by saying all of the above. And the other nuance there is now we have folks, again, as you mentioned, typically middle class, upper middle class, though, who are willing to come forward. Stigma, unfortunately, still lives on regarding folks who have substance use disorders, as well as folks who have other mental disorders, other mental illnesses. But in this current crisis, we had families come forward and say that they had family members who were struggling, who died, who were dealing with substance use disorders. And that also has led to sort of amplifying this issue. But again, there are many factors that led to this. And the other piece of the conversation that we won't have time to talk a lot about today is pain. We have to make sure that we don't, in our zeal, in our appropriate zeal, as I have said, to address this opioid epidemic, that we don't forget about those who suffer from pain. And clearly, we need physicians are being more judicious in our prescribing. But again, getting back to some differences, we know that communities of color are often undertreated for pain. And so an unintended consequences of our work right now could be that communities of color continue to be undertreated for pain. So it's very complex, and this is why I'm very glad to be able to have the opportunity to even chat with you for a few minutes, because it's complex, it's layered. And so sort of looking at this from a superficial aspect and just deciding that there's one magic bullet, one panacea to solve this problem is, I think, unwise. The other issue that I've talked about more are the social determinants of health. It's critical that local communities appreciate this. I talk about my home state of West Virginia, where there was significant unemployment. And when you don't have hope, that also leads to many issues. And so it really is important to appreciate this in context. And one more thing I'll say about pain, if we want to make sure that folks who have pain are treated appropriately, and we also want to make sure that we have alternatives to opioids, we have to make sure those alternatives are available. And so it's up to our payers, our insurers, to make sure that physical therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy and the other therapies that we know to have some evidence behind them are available.
And you mentioned that about pain, and research has shown that doctors, medical professionals, think African Americans can have more pain. We can take pain more than other races of humans, although that has been proven false. I mean, that is not true. But people who do suffer from pain, you mentioned some of the other things that can be used to assist community members who suffer from chronic pain that doesn't involve a pill. And I know as humans, we're also always looking for the quick fix, give me a pill, make it go away. But when you mentioned, you know, the holistic approaches, a lot of those things are not available to a broad community. I've heard that acupuncture is a wonderful relief for chronic pain in backs and hips and all of those things, but there are not very many acupuncturists who take insurance or insurance covering it, and there are not that many acupuncturists, period, to treat the number of people who would need that kind of treatment. So what becomes the answer as we're searching and dealing with the outcome of these overdoses and actual deaths from medicine?
I want to say two things, and I don't want to generalize that all doctors believe that communities of color, particularly African Americans, have that belief. But we do know that there are some who have some implicit biases, and those still exist. And so you and I know that the best disinfectant for issues is conversation and calling them out. And so I would answer your question by saying having the discussion, having discussions like we're having, having a discussion in a forum like recently Commissioner Johnson held in DeKalb County. I chair the AMA's Task Force to Reduce Opioid Abuse, the AMA Opioid Task Force. And certainly physicians are leading on this issue and we're having conversations at that level. But it's also important to have this conversation at the local level because of the complexity of this issue, and the answers to this issue are complex and they're not one size fits all and they're not one answer. So it's all of the above. It's, again, as I said, physicians are leading. We're being more judicious in our prescribing. We have urged the community to be careful in the safe storage and disposal of opioids, because we know that often the first misuse comes from the medicine cabinet. We have to look at laws and regulations and insurance companies to make sure that where there's the evidence, you mentioned acupuncture, and there is some evidence, but we also have to admit that we don't have all the evidence on all of the methods that can be used to treat pain. And then, again, we have to think about if they are covered by our payers, by insurers, by Medicare, Medicaid, then we have to work on the workforce shortage. So it really is complex, and it really takes all of the stakeholders getting together. There is a recent summit here. It actually occurs here every year in Atlanta, the National Prescription and Heroin Abuse Summit. And I attended several seminars where local communities were getting together and developing solutions that work best for them locally. I attended a session in Marin County, wealthy county, north of San Francisco. And that's great. But we also know that the solutions that are developed for Marin County won't necessarily work for DeKalb County, Georgia, or my birth county of Mercer County, West Virginia, or the next county over, McDowell County, West Virginia, which has been particularly hit hard. So again, it really takes understanding the evidence and having conversations on the local level about what works. And sometimes being honest, again, as we started off the conversation, about our past misunderstandings. Again, and I've heard many law enforcement officials say in this that we cannot arrest our way out of this. So clearly law enforcement realizes now there are certain areas where law enforcement is certainly appropriate, and where there's criminal activity going on, we need law enforcement. But again, it's going to take all of the stakeholders working together to address this issue with the involvement of communities at the local level.
I remember, learning about drugs in school, in elementary school, and heroin and opioids were considered some of the harshest drugs to become addicted to. And alcohol, marijuana were not considered as harsh, but marijuana is included in the same drug schedule as heroin and cocaine. Is it that we have made, marijuana is becoming more and more available? Is it that kids are thinking if marijuana is not what they said it was, then heroin is okay? Or is it really just people trying to treat their pain and becoming addicted to the painkillers? And what is the dichotomy there? What is the catch 22, so to speak, that we've gotten ourselves into where drugs are concerned, when you consider alcohol and marijuana being so readily available in most communities?
Well, certainly you hit the nail upon the head, and attitudes do affect use. And that's why, from a physician standpoint, from a medical community standpoint, of course, we rely on the evidence. I mean, we are required and should rely on the evidence. But we know that societal attitudes also play a role in that. Perhaps one of the reasons that have led to the overuse and the misuse of prescriptions is everyone may think that, well, if my doctor prescribed it, it is totally safe. But I think that, again, belies the evidence because I will tell you that aspirin is not totally safe. For those folks who have, stomach and GI problems and are prone to bleeds, aspirin and ibuprofen are not safe for those. So we really have to make sure that we have a full understanding of all of the medications that we use, whether they are prescription and over-the-counter. And the one other key thing, I think you mentioned what is the answer. Treatment and the availability of treatment is critical. Again, we have treatment, the resources for treatment for those with mental disorders, particularly those who don't have insurance and substance use disorders, have been woefully inadequate. Recently in legislation, there's been an increase in funding for treatment. There will absolutely need to be more.
Now, one of the reasons that I thought it was imperative to get you here, Dr. Harris, was I think you gave the statistic at the conference that more people died from opioid overdoses in the state of Georgia than from car accidents in 2016, 2015, I believe. That's a lot of people. What are we doing to just address the fact that, as you mentioned, literally 90 people a day are dying in our country from opioid abuse? How do we address that?
Well, again, many ways. And treatment is one way, and the availability of treatment. I also noted in my talk that 2 out of 10 folks who seek treatment for substance use disorder can get it when they need it. And I compared that to how we treat someone with diabetes. Appropriately, if you have diabetes, and let's say you indulge and you had too much sugar and your blood sugar is really high, which requires a visit to an emergency department, you get the treatment that you need. No one says, you know what, we don't have any beds available. Go home. You might have a bed. Call this number. There might be a bed in 6 to 8 weeks. But that's what we say oftentimes to folks, particularly those who are underinsured or who have no insurance, when they come in for an overdose. Those folks often have a substance use disorder, and they need treatment. And oftentimes those folks are given a number to call and with a hope that there is some treatment available soon. And so many folks are doing great things. I want to not downplay that. The good news is that so many folks are working on this issue. Again, at that summit, we had communities working on issue, getting together, making sure there's treatment. Emergency departments are working on this issue. You know, my organization, the AMA, is working on those issues. So many folks are working on this issue. There is hope. We do need more resources, and treatment is critical.
Dr. Harris, I want to thank you so much for coming today and sharing this information about the opioid crisis in our country and in our state. For our listeners who would like to follow up or get more information from you about what your organization is doing, how can they reach you?
Well, the easiest way is just to Google the American Medical Association and then go to our Task Force on Opioid Abuse page. And we have resources there. And soon there will be an entire microsite. Now, that site is mainly for physicians. But I do want to give a shout out to the Medical Association of Georgia. I'm very involved. They have a great campaign. It's called the Think About It campaign. And so I would urge listeners to go Google Think About It campaign and go to that website because there, and that's the Medical Association of Georgia and its foundation, there is information on that website for patients and the public. So again, lots of work going on to address this issue. We just have to keep having the conversations. The epidemic is evolving. Again, now we're having fentanyl and synthetic fentanyl that's driving the overdoses. And so we have to constantly be on guard and address the issues that are before us. But it's about conversations and continuing to work on this issue together.
Dr. Harris, I want to thank you for sharing this information with us. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.